For those of you who have been following Culturally R since the beginning, it should come as no surprise that I love everything about culture and traditions, especially Japanese culture. In fact, all the posts and interviews related to Japan and Japanese culture, like Ikigai, Wa, which is the concept of harmony, Ikebana, and Kintsugi, are some of the most popular articles and interviews on Culturally R's. So you know this interview is already super special, right? I am so thrilled to welcome Barrett Ishida to talk about exploring Tokyo and Japan on the podcast today. Barrett is a Japanese American, born and raised in Hawaii, but now has been living in Japan for the past 11 years. Barrett talked about how initially his fascination for Japan and wanting to live there was to understand his culture and his heritage better. He thought it would be something he would do for maybe a couple of years and then move on. But 11 years later, he says he cannot see himself living anywhere else. Barrett and I talked about so many interesting things about Japanese people, Japanese culture, and of course, a first-timer's guide to Tokyo. Barrett gave us an itinerary of exploring the old and the new of Japan. He says that's what is so special about living in Tokyo and Japan in general. It's not just about fancy things and shiny things. It's about how well the old and the new integrate with each other, each special in their own way. We also talked about Japanese food, something that Barrett is super passionate about. He says one of the best ways to explore a place is through food, and not just the fancy restaurants, but the local traditional places. Just go in and strike up a conversation with the owners and learn about their lives. He says it is an experience unlike any you will find in any guidebook for sure. It was such a delight to speak with Barrett, and he showcased Tokyo and Japan in a very unique way, a local's point of view. So if, like me, you too are in love with all things Japan and Japanese culture, come join Barrett and me as we explore his beautiful country on this episode of Culturally Ours.
Welcome to Culturally Ours, a show where we explore global cultural diversity in an intimate way through conversations and narratives around lifestyle, culture, food, art, and travel. Host Karthika Gupta talks to people from all over the world who have intimately experienced different cultures as a way to understand each other's worlds from the inside out, focusing on what we have in common.
Welcome, Barrett. Thank you so much for joining me on Culturally Ours. I am very excited to have you on the podcast and cannot wait to chat with you, get to know you a little bit better, and sort of get to know your corner of the world a little bit.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here. And thank you for staying up too. I know it's pretty late for you.
Yeah, it's 9 o'clock. Yeah. Thankfully, the kids are in bed. But my only concern is that if somebody comes knocking on my door, we'll deal with it when that happens. Yeah. So before we sort of jump right into the questions, can you tell us a little bit sort of who you are, where you're from, just to help set the stage for this conversation?
Yeah. So my name is Barrett. I grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii in the U.S. I'm a Japanese American, Japanese heritage, a fourth generation, grew up in a completely English-speaking environment. After high school, I kind of moved around the West Coast, and then I decided to move to Japan. I decided to move to Japan probably because I have Japanese heritage. And then also when I graduated from high school, I took a trip and it kind of changed everything for me. I just fell in love with it and it really interested me. And I decided, you know, someday I want to try living there. And so I finally did. Taught English for the first 5 years. And then I moved to Tokyo and then started working at doing a marketing job at a Japanese agency.
Wow. So how long have you been in Tokyo?
6 years now. This is my 11th year in Japan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
It's much longer than I thought I'd be here.
Well, you obviously love it or are enjoying yourself that you're there for 11 years.
Yes.
Now, do you still have family back in Hawaii or in the States?
Yeah, okay. Most of my family is in Hawaii. Pretty much that's where my family immigrated to from Japan. way back in the day, and majority of us are there.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about Japan and specifically Tokyo. You've been there for 11 years. You obviously love it. Just kind of walk me through why you continue to live there, what attracts you to not just Japanese culture, but, you know, the city and the country as a whole.
I think, it's such a different place, you know. But growing up in Hawaii, we kind of were influenced a little bit by Japanese culture and just Asian culture in general. But it was always kind of interesting to me. And then when I took that trip after high school, it like just kind of inspired me to take a chance and move and see what it's all about. But I think if I think about why I've stayed here, so to be honest, my intention was to stay for 2 years and then move back to the US and go to grad school and do that kind of thing. But 11 years, I started to reflect, you know, what makes me stay here. I think there's a few reasons. One is that I feel really safe. I don't worry about being mugged in the street. I don't, I used to live in San Francisco, and, you know, every now and then there'd be something that I'd come across that would make me feel for my safety and just fear for my safety and just kind of, you know, scared. And so when I came to Japan, I would see these dark, tiny alleys, and everything in my body told me like not to even go near there. But, you know, it's pretty safe. You see like little kids walking around, you know, elderly people walking around in the night, and it's more or less safe. It's not perfect, but it's you know, that is one thing that I don't have to worry about as much, which is fantastic. Another thing is that the food lives up to the hype. It's just really good. You know, I've complained about everything there is to complain about living in Japan and, you know, the difficulties of it, but food is something I've never complained about. It's fantastic. And it's not overly priced either. It's pretty affordable. You can get decent food for really cheap. And the same goes with housing. The first studio that I lived in Tokyo probably is around like $950 US. And I could never find that kind of apartment to live by myself in any of the cities that I lived in. Granted, I lived in kind of more expensive areas in the US, like, you know, LA and San Francisco and stuff. But
right.
I think that's another reason. And just the overall day-to-day is pretty smooth. It's just easy living for the most part.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, I know, especially given the times mm-hmm. that we are in and everything that has happened, you know, with 2020, right? How has Tokyo, how has Japan as a country in itself handled the pandemic? Mm-hmm. And, you know, are things opening up? And if so, what are some of the reopening? What does the reopening plan look like?
So I think overall we've done okay. Of course, there's a lot of complaints, but overall there hasn't been an enormous spike or anything. Especially considering how big of a city Tokyo is and how dense it is, I think overall it's been okay. We've had two waves. The first one was in April, and the city kind of shut down a little bit, and then we had a second one come in the summertime. But we never really shut down, actually. Apparently there's some law in Japan where the government cannot force complete shutdown, and so it's really weird. But so it was more like, you know, please, please, please stay home. It wasn't like you have to stay home and shut down all this stuff. And so there were less people out and there were more people working from home, but we never could shut down. So most shops stayed open, at least they adjusted their hours or something, but they were open. Companies, especially the older, bigger, kind of more traditional Japanese companies, they are actually very analog, and they have really outdated work styles. So some of them couldn't work from home. And so that was an issue. But overall, I think we've done okay, especially because wearing masks are kind of part of normal culture here to begin with. So there was no real big issue with masks other than there wasn't enough at one point. And culturally, Japan is very non-touch. So we don't really hug here. We don't shake hands so much, do kisses on the cheek or anything like that. So it's already somewhat socially distanced in a sense. But from this month, actually, or October, it's October here. We are slowly reopening. So certain people with certain types of visas can come back in, and then there's like a smaller limit for regular tourists. And I think it's going to be opening up step by step that way.
That's very interesting. And you bring up such a great point about just the culture in general. You're so right in, you know, Asian culture, wearing masks is something that has always happened. And so it just feels like a natural progression. But also the fact that as a culture, it's not that touchy and feely. And so it's like easier to kind of move into this sort of mandated rule or guidelines, right? Now, you talked about travel, which sort of leads me quite nicely into my next question, mm-hmm. that, you know, it's such a tourist hub, especially Tokyo. And with the way the travel has changed these past few months, mm-hmm. do you see that sort of impacting the tourist sort of culture, the travel industry, and just the economy in general?
Yeah. So over the past several years that I've been here, tourism just really skyrocketed in Japan as a whole. And, you know, you got a lot of people from the West and increasing amounts of people from China. And it's just crowded streets of so many tourists. And now there's like none. And so for us living here, it's fantastic, actually, to be honest, because there was a sense of overcrowdedness. And, you know, Tokyo especially is already overcrowded as it is with just Japanese people here. But yeah, the tourism has pretty much completely shut down. And so what happened was there's a campaign going on by the Japanese government. It's called Go to Travel. And it's pretty much encouraging people to travel, because I think a lot of the hotels and, you know, just travel related, tourism related companies are really suffering. And so they are actually giving us discounts if we, you know, go on, catch a train or catch a plane somewhere and stay at a hotel. They'll give a percentage back to us. So they're really pushing us to, you know, get out of the house and go someplace.
You know, I was talking to somebody earlier in the month from Slovenia, and she said the same thing, that the government is actually giving locals like a voucher, you know, 200 euro, whatever the amount is, for actually going out and staying in a hotel, staying in a, you know, going to a restaurant, eating, just because they want to revitalize the economy. So it's very interesting that Japan's sort of doing the same thing.
Yeah, and they're also expanding it to eateries as well. So I don't know the details yet, but I think if you spend more than $100, you get some kind of discount. Don't quote me on that. On that amount, but it's something like that. It's called Go to Eat campaign. So they're really trying to get people moving around and spending money again.
Hey there. I hope you are enjoying this episode of Culturally Ours. Did you know there are so many wonderful resources, articles, and blog posts on the website to extend your Culturally Ours experience? We also have a library of free resources, like a travel guide to some of the most culturally diverse places around the world, a global kitchen essentials cheat sheet, and so much more. Head on over to culturallyours.com/free to grab these, and be sure to check back often as we're constantly adding more resources just for you. Now, let's get back to the episode. That's very interesting. Now, you're a local for all practical purposes, having lived there for so long. So this one is sort of, you know, kind of from a local's point of view, right? So if I or somebody else wanted to plan a trip, where would you take us? Give me maybe an itinerary on sort of what to do, where to go, and from a maybe a local's perspective, not really a tour guide.
I think to be honest, it really depends. mostly on a couple of things. One is what season you're coming. Japan is very, the culture and all the events and whatnot are very centered around what season it is. So for example, if you're here in the summer, we'd be going to some festivals and seeing some fireworks and stuff. But if we're in the spring, we're going on a picnic to see the cherry blossoms. And so it really depends on the season and how many times have you been here. But I think, so when I get asked what are the places that you have to go to for a first timer in Tokyo, I actually don't go deep at all. It's kind of a silly answer probably, but I start in Shinjuku. And so it's kind of this main hub of Tokyo. It has the busiest train station. It's, you know, it's just a business, shopping, entertainment hub. So I think we start there just to see all that is Tokyo. And then catch a train to an area called Harajuku. Harajuku is known for its kind of cosplay, costume wearing, you know, that kind of culture. It's more geared to young people. There's a lot of boutiques there. I'll take my guests there. And right next to it is this area called Omotesando. And that's kind of more high-end fashionable boutiques, but it's great for people watching. People are really dressed up. You also see a lot of like media there, just kind of interviewing people and taking street snaps of people walking just because they're like so fashionable. And then hop on the train and we'll go to Asakusa, which is kind of an older area. It's got one of the more famous shrines in Tokyo. There are a lot of more traditional older shops. So we kind of get that contrast of, you know, of Tokyo. And then take the train back to Harajuku and walk down to Shibuya for night scenes. So Shibuya has a lot of lights. It's an entertainment district. It is. It has this famous crosswalk. I think people have seen it, but it gets really crowded. And just surrounded by all the lights is great. And then there's a new building that just got built there with a kind of a rooftop, like sky deck. So we would go up there and enjoy the view of Tokyo at night. I think that would be my one day recommendation for a first timer in Tokyo.
That's yeah, talking a
yes,
lot.
Yes. I didn't know where to cut it. You know, so.
No, but I like the kind of the, you know, the new mm-hmm. and the old mixed in, because it's such a mm-hmm. old city that you want to get in and see both the, you know, the older cultural aspect of it plus the newer, hipper, you know, the fashionable.
I think that's one of the big draws of Tokyo just in general, because there's such a huge contrast. Like you can see mm-hmm. centuries old shrines and even homes. And then, you know, just down the block is this like brand new high rise of glass. And, you know, it's just really contrasting. You see, you know, some people in kimonos walking around every now and then, but then you'll see, you know, others wearing, you know, designer European wear walking down the street. It's really interesting to see. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one thing that, you know, kind of I'm noticing, and perhaps you are as well, that in the travel space, a lot of things are becoming, you know, kind of more off the beaten path, more grassroots, very hyper-localized sort of experiences. So the next series of questions are your, Barrett's personal perspective. Your, you know, what would you do and where would you go kind of thing. So what is your favorite restaurant and more importantly, why?
Yes, that's a very hard question.
I know, especially when you said food is one of the things that you most definitely enjoy.
So much good food here. And there's just so many restaurants. I heard that there are more Italian restaurants in Tokyo than there are restaurants in San Francisco, just to kind of give you kind of give you the scale of how many places to eat here. But, you know, if I have to pick, I would actually say to eat at a yakiniku restaurant. And it's a kind of a Korean-inspired Japanese barbecue restaurant. I think the quality of the meat, just the quality of the meal itself, is the biggest gap between Japan and say the US. I think in the US you can find good sushi, And so a lot of people come to Japan for sushi, and it's good, don't get me wrong. But I think the biggest gap is in the quality of meat for the price. So for me, I think my go-to restaurant would be a yakiniku place. There's kind of a few of them. They have slightly different names, but it's Ushigoro. And there's a Ushigoro Kan and Ushigoro Bambina that I've been to. And they are in this area of Tokyo called Ebisu. I've taken my sister and her husband and a couple of groups of friends to these restaurants, and they've like completely fell in love with it. You know, like one friend was like, it completely changed my life. It's just a really, really high quality meat, and it's not overly expensive for what you get. You'd be paying like 2-3 times the price in the US if you were able to find that kind of restaurant in your area. So that would probably be my pick, but man, I could really, you know, write a couple pages of names.
Yeah. No, but this is good. It's good to get. I love asking these questions because it really gives me an insight into like the like you as a person and what you like. And sometimes, you know, you when there's so many choices, it's like, yeah, tell me where to go. I don't want to be able to. Yeah. I don't want to decide. Right. Now, what's your favorite activity to do in the city or even in, yeah, you know, anywhere,
I think,
in Japan?
You know, just exploring the neighborhoods. So a lot of times, to be honest, it is because of a restaurant or eatery that I want to check out. But I think just exploring kind of the minor neighborhoods, the smaller neighborhoods. You know, I know I mentioned taking people to the big areas if it was their first time to Japan. But honestly, I think it's these small areas that really make Tokyo what it is. Just Tokyo is really dense and compact, but it's also really spread out. And there are these tiny, you know, tiny stations, almost run down. And, you know, there's nothing fancy about the neighborhood, but they have this kind of retro feel sometimes, you know, just not stylish at all. But there's something about the vibe of the area of these areas that feel really authentic. And as someone who likes taking pictures, you know, I love to take pictures of that kind of thing as well. But it's these neighborhoods where you find, you know, these amazing small eateries that are never going to be on travel blogs. You know, and just seeing the way that regular people live their life. I think the image of Tokyo for someone who doesn't know it is, you know, fancy lights, that Shibuya crossing, busy crossing, catching the hectic train, anime, I guess you would throw that in there. But it's not really a regular, typical person's life here. So going to these small little neighborhoods and just exploring how they're each different is just very interesting to me. And it's one of the favorite things that I like to do. Yeah,
I love it. And you're so right in that you get a sense of truly what a place is and the people and the culture away from all the fancy and the, you know, shiny, right? It's the day-to-day life. And that speaks a lot to a community and a culture. So I love that. Now, any sort of outdoor spaces that are perhaps more, again, like a local hangout.
So, you know, to be honest, I think one of the biggest complaints and the biggest negative marks in Tokyo is the lack of outdoor spaces and the outdoor like parks and scenery of like nature. So, you know, a popular local hangout is actually kind of the more well-known park. It's a Yoyogi park. It's near Harajuku. It's already really well-known, but it is where a lot of locals go. There's a lot of green space. It's very wide, and there's a lot of different things that you can see there. For example, there's like this group of dancers, and they just wear these black jackets, kind of like John Travolta in Greece, and they just they just like, you know, dance outdoors. You see that. You see more modern pop dancing going on. A lot of people playing music, having picnics. So I think that is a very real and a very local place to go to. Even though it's already well known, it is like a destination for locals as well. But to be honest, a lot of people will go outside of Tokyo to experience more you know, nature and outdoor spaces, unfortunately.
So, and that's totally fine. Can you share maybe some that you find yourself regularly going to?
I've been going outside to the Hachioji area and Minami Osawa area. It's kind of just west of Tokyo. And there are some parks and whatnot that have cherry blossoms. So for, you know, cherry blossom season, we go out there and have picnics. It's a little bit less crowded. You get to, you know, not be surrounded by all these tall buildings. I think, you know, those areas are pretty good to just get away just for a day. Yeah,
it's great that even though there are not too many parks in the city, you can still get out
and be out in nature, relatively close by, right away. Maybe 30, 40 minutes, and it'll get you there. Yeah.
Oh, that's not too bad. Yeah, yeah. Okay, what about some local experiences, you know, things like cooking classes or painting or, you know, bike tours, some things that we might not find in like Lonely Planet's Guide to Tokyo?
I think, well, more than an organized tour or a specific experience, I think, so there are two things that I would recommend just doing in general. One is to, if you need to go to a nearby station, maybe like one or two stops, I think the best thing to do is just take the walk. I think a lot of tourists are not prepared, especially from America, that I find, because we're not really a walking culture. You know, it's easy to get tired in a city like Tokyo, just the crowd and just like walking, catching the train. But if you can and have enough energy, my recommendation for local experience is to just take the walk. A lot of times between two stations is where you find the best cafes and eateries, the best, you know, just the best shops that are just really interesting. Really random, like a shop with just model planes to make, or or old barber shops that geared towards older Japanese men, and you know, it's really interesting just to find these local spots in these really local areas, and a lot of times it is these areas that have the best things. My second recommendation is to, instead of going to the hyped up places to eat, try a really rundown small izakaya. So izakayas are kind of, they're traditional Japanese pubs, but they're more like restaurants / drinking areas. And a lot of these smaller areas and the rundown ones, you'll be cramped in, but you get more of an opportunity to talk to the owners and the people around you who are a little bit tipsy. There will definitely be a struggle to communicate in English, but I think that's part of the fun. There are a lot of so Japanese people are a little bit kind of shy or more reserved in general, but when they drink, they're a little bit more outgoing. They get a little bit more courage. So in these pubs, you know, you have more of an opportunity to kind of chat to the people around you and just kind of hear, you know, why did they start this place? How many years have they been running it? I went to one nearby where I live, and it was this really small place, and it was just a bar counter of maybe 6 seats. And, you know, the guy was talking about how he took over the family business, has been running it for 40 years. And before that, they used to make traditional Japanese slippers. And it's just really interesting to hear these stories of, you know, real people, you know, making a living here in Tokyo. I think that those are probably the two local experiences that I would recommend doing. It's not an organized thing, but definitely just try it.
No, but that sounds so fascinating, because again, it's like on the ground, you know, kind of right there with everybody, and it's an experience for sure. And you're so right. Sometimes when you don't know the language, that's
I'm speaking from personal experience too. Like I found that these are the things that really are very interesting, very local, you know, and they make you think about a lot of things and reflect on a lot of things as well. So I think these are my recommendations. Yeah.
Sounds great. Now, you talked earlier about the campaign to get people out of the house, you know, get people to explore and travel. So where have you gone recently or maybe discovered a new local gem or something that you didn't know?
I haven't traveled too much, but I went to, so it's kind of a well-known area. It's called Akihabara. And I was able to stay in a hotel there for just a little short staycation over the weekend. Akihabara is known for its kind of manga and anime culture. But to be honest, like, I'm not interested in manga and anime at all, basically, which is kind of weird for a foreigner living in Japan. But, you know, a lot of people visiting will go to that area to, you know, shop for like figurines and toys and comics and stuff. But I was looking for more local things. So I went to these kisaten coffee shops. So they're traditional coffee shops, and they inspired, you know, people like the founder of Blue Bottle Coffee, which is a very big kind of boutique coffee shop, I guess you'd call it, in the Bay Area of California. And they kind of moved here, and it kind of inspired him and influenced him. And it's just these really small coffee shops that are not fancy, but they might be in these like dingy buildings. One of them that I went to was in this really old building, tiny elevator on the third floor. It's just real, real hole in the wall kind of places. And I found out that, you know, even though Akihabara has this image of, you know, lights and games and comics and whatnot, there are these really older, like really old shops there. I think that was a surprise to me because I've never done that. And just visiting there for the weekend kind of forced me to explore the actual area. And I think that was one of the things that I discovered that I just didn't know about the area before.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds fantastic. Quite an adventure. Now, Barrett, this is going to be a sort of a question that is, again, I want to get your perspective. And there's no right or wrong answer. And, you know, everybody has a different take to it. So whatever you're comfortable sharing, where do you think travel is headed in the future, given everything that we've gone through so far?
That's a very hard one. I think, you know, for a while, I think it'll be kind of toned down a little bit because there's going to be people that are not willing to take the risk of traveling. I think there's a lot of questions on people's minds. You know, even if things somewhat got back to normal, you know, if they got sick in a foreign country, you know, then what is their situation? You know, what is the help that they can get? What are the hospital situations in that country? And I think these are things that a lot of people didn't think about before, but I think they'll be forced to think about these potential issues because, you know, once you get sick, it's you can't just hop on a plane and come back to your home country, you know? So I think it'll be toned down at least for a little bit. And there'll probably be a lot of precautions and safety measures put on by just the airlines and hotels. But I think eventually it will return to somewhat some normalcy that we've seen before. I think because people forget and get complacent, you know. And so, you know, there might be permanent measures put in place. You know, I mean, if we remember, like from 9/11, that, you know, it was completely different after that, but we've gotten used to it. And travel has returned. So I think it'll be somewhat similar to that. You know, but I think for a little bit, there'll be less traveling going on, which might be a good thing because I think like Tokyo, and I know a lot of places had some over-tourism problems. But yeah, I think it'll be toned down for a little bit, at least for the near future.
Yeah, fair enough. And I like what you said, that eventually people forget.
I think so.
But, you know, hopefully things move in the right direction and it's, you know, it's not like completely forgotten. Now, what are your travel plans? Mm. Where are you thinking of going next, whenever that next is?
So on my list before all of this happened was to go to Vietnam. I've been to Vietnam once, and I really liked it, especially Hanoi. And I just wanted to go again. And I wanted to go back to Hanoi and see a new area called Hoi An. I've never been there before. It just looks gorgeous. People in Hanoi were extremely nice. Food was really good. So that was on the list. So I think that would be kind of my first international trip that I would plan to take. But I think, to be honest, I think this whole pandemic and restriction on international travel was kind of a sign to explore Japan a little bit more. You know, I think a lot of times we don't really appreciate the country or the area that we're in enough. We take a look at a little bit and then have our eyes, as you know, for people who like traveling, you know, we have our eyes to a different country, a different area, and just kind of really desire getting out. But I think this kind of made me realize that there are a lot of places in Japan that I just haven't been to and that I should explore, because if I am to move out of the country, there are going to be a list of places where I'm like, why didn't I ever go there? I was just a train ride away, you know, or, you know, 1 hour flight. So on my list coming up, and I'm taking advantage of that travel campaign by the government, so getting some money back for this travel. But I'm going to an area called Kanazawa, which is, I've never been, but it's getting to be a popular travel destination. People say it's like another Kyoto. So a lot of more traditional gardens and, you know, things like traditional sites to see. So I'm really excited to go there. It's also on the side of the Japan Sea, and I've never actually been to that coast in Japan yet. So a couple new experiences right off the bat with Kanazawa. Another place that I'm planning to go to is in a prefecture called Aomori. It's at the tip of the main island in Japan, and I've never been that much further north from where I am. I've been to the northernmost island, but I haven't explored the north part of this island. So I'm really interested to see that. I know it's a lot colder, but I heard culture is a little bit different. You know, the style of cooking is a little bit different. The way of speaking is also a little different. So I'm just really excited to explore a part of Japan that I haven't been to yet.
Oh, they all sound amazing. And you said something that's so spot on. We don't appreciate that what's in our own backyards a lot of times. Mm-hmm. I'm from India, and I moved away when I was 21 years old. And now when I go back, because I still have family there, I'm exploring so much of India that I never even knew existed when I was living there.
Yeah, same.
So it's very interesting how mindsets change.
Yeah, same. I mean, you know, when I grew up in Hawaii, and I didn't appreciate what Hawaii was. And then I still have friends in Hawaii that are like, you know, there's nothing to see or no place to go or no pictures to take. And I'm like, you realize like a lot of people pay a lot of money to visit there, right? You know, it's a huge travel destination. I think there are things that we get used to and just take for granted. And I think if anything, the biggest takeaway, you know, if your family and loved ones are safe and you haven't suffered too much from this pandemic, I think the biggest takeaway is to just, you know, look around and see what you have first before, you know, going and looking far away and being, you know, just be appreciative of what you have first.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. Well, thank you so much, Barrett. This was incredible. It was such a thrill to chat with you, get to know Tokyo. And I thank you so much for your time.
It's really fun chatting with you. Great podcast. You know, just hopefully you get to visit Japan someday and just explore it as well.
Oh, for sure. And I'm taking you up on the offer of having you show me around.
Of course.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Culturally Ours. Check out the show notes at culturallyours.com. If you've enjoyed the show, please be sure to hit subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with your family and friends.